Radio Prague News.
Czech exports reached a record 3.9 trillion crowns in 2015, according to the country's Statistics Bureau. The Czech government is firming up its position on EU reform, and the Norwegian authorities have returned a baby to its biological parents, including the Czech mother. Czech exports reached a record 3.9 trillion crowns in 2015, the Czech Statistics Office reported on Monday. The figure represents a rise of 7.2% from the previous year. A little over 83% of domestic exports were destined for the European Union. Exports to neighboring Germany alone increased by 8.7% to almost 1.3 trillion crowns. Germany is the Czech Republic's main trading partner. Czech exports to Slovakia and Great Britain also saw a rise in 2015, but to Russia fell by almost 31%. The Czech government on Monday discussed the terms of a deal demanded by Britain on reform of the European Union. On the key issue of withholding some benefits to workers from other EU countries, the Czech government is arguing that such a move only be applied to newly arrived workers and not those already living in Britain. As part of a proposed deal unveiled last week by European Council President Donald Tusk, Britain would be allowed to limit work-related benefits if the influx of workers puts too much pressure on its system. The State Secretary for European Affairs, Tomáš Prouza, said Prague's final position will be hammered out with its Visegrad regional partners ahead of a summit next week on the reforms. Austrian investigators say a massive avalanche which caught 17 Czech skiers in the Austrian Alps on Saturday, killing five, was in all likelihood not anyone's fault but broke away on its own. The skiers were in two groups when the avalanche hit. The Tyrol police spokesman described the avalanche as several hundred meters wide. The tear point where the slab had broken away was reportedly a meter deep. The mountain service has warned that avalanche warnings are still in place in areas. A Norwegian court has ordered the country's child welfare services to return a nine-month-old baby to its Czech-Norwegian parents. The decision was confirmed by the spokesman for the Czech Ministry of Labour and Social Affairs. The baby was awaiting a kidney transplant, was taken away from the parents a number of weeks ago on the grounds that they had not sufficiently bonded with the infant. Czech lawyer Pavel Hasenkopf said that detailed hospital records had played a key role in overturning the original decision, which he described as lies and manipulation by the authorities. He added the family would release more information about the case in the coming days. The unemployment rate in the Czech Republic climbed in January to 6.4% from December 6.2%, the Labour Office announced Monday. Just over 14,000 Czechs were added to the jobless total during the month, giving a total of around 467,000 seeking work. The number of vacancies stands at around 108,000, the highest January total since 2008. In other news, around 200 taxi drivers protested on Prague's main highway in the center of the city early on Monday morning. Only one lane of the normally busy highway was left free for traffic. The protest was called by the Association of Taxi Concessionaries against what they described as unfair competition from unlicensed taxi drivers using such services as Uber. They also want to highlight the stalled talks with Prague City Hall about higher permitted fares. Talks between licensed taxi drivers and town hall officials collapsed in November last year. And that's it for the news for now, but you'll find more at our website, radio.cz. This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Velinger. Coming up in today's program, a symbol of help for refugees came under attack in Prague at the weekend. Also, we'll have the very latest from the world of Czech sport. And later, we meet Tomáš Kratochvíl, a young documentary filmmaker who took his camera and went to live in a Romani ghetto in North Bohemia. That's all ahead. On Saturday evening, hours after anti-Islamic demonstrations in Prague, around 20 masked men attacked a social center in the city, one that organizes collections for refugees. The assailants threw petrol bombs and other missiles in an incident that has been condemned by politicians. Ian Willoughby reports.
Anti-Muslim demonstrations were held in Prague on Saturday afternoon in a series of protests across Europe. Clashes occurred in some parts of the city, with masked men appearing to be neo-Nazis throwing missiles at refugees' rights activists. At about 7:30 in the evening, an estimated 20 masked men attacked Klinika, a former squat in the Prague 3 area that, among other activities, collects clothing and other materials for refugees. The police said that they threw stones and Molotov cocktails at the autonomous centre, injuring one person slightly. A member of the group that runs Klinika, who was inside at the time, Tadeusz Polak, described the damage shortly afterwards.
It has several broken windows. The main window of the cafe in the front of our building is completely smashed. At the time of the attack, there were around 20 people inside, and if they had been hit, it could have been a lot more serious.
Matěj Michalk-Žaloudek is the head of the Green Party in Prague 3, which supports Klinika. He says the reason it was attacked by neo-Nazis is clear.
Klinika is a symbol for helping refugees in this time in Prague. So it's the most famous building where the people live who are helping refugees. So for them it's a symbol, and I have no doubt that was the main issue why they attacked this centre.
Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka was among a number of politicians who condemned Saturday's arson attack. President Miloš Zeman has as yet made no comment on the matter. Several hundred people assembled in a small park beside Klinika on Sunday afternoon to express their support for the social centre. Also referring to the stabbing of a Muslim man a week earlier, an organiser described such incidents as a concretization of the hatred in Czech society. The Greens' Matěj Michalk-Žaloudek, who was also there, says a more sober discussion of the migrant crisis would be one way forward.
We have to speak, how many people can we manage, where can they live, who will pay for it, for how long will it be, how can we integrate them, and so on. So I think these issues still have to be discussed. And when something like the day before yesterday happened, when something like the last week happened, the politicians have to speak really loudly that this can't be, this is too much, and that's not a discussion, and that's really a bad thing for democracy.
And that was the Green Party's Matěj Michalk-Žaloudek, ending that report by Ian Willoughby. Now in other news, for the last half year, the Czech Republic's dominant electricity company and nuclear power plant operator, ČEZ, has been plagued by flawed safety checks at both of its nuclear power plants. It now turns out that the flawed checks continued for around a decade. Chris Johnston has the details.
ČEZ Managing Director Daniel Beneš was in the hot seat Sunday on Czech television's flagship current affairs programme. He and his company have been the target of sustained criticism for the last months, with only one of the four reactors at the Dukovany nuclear power plant working for most of that time. The reason has been hurried safety checks on the welds of kilometres of piping at the plant, after it was revealed that previous X-ray examinations by a subcontracting company were flawed. The flawed safety checks affected ČEZ's second, more modern nuclear reactor, Temelin, as well, although the backup systems there are different from that at Dukovany and the risks were judged to be of a lower level that did not require the reactor to shut down. ČEZ's bosses put a figure on the lost revenues from the long-term Dukovany shutdown for 2015 at around 2.5 billion crowns. But the shutdowns and damages have continued into 2016, and some analysts reckoned at least another billion crowns can be added to that figure. But the real eye-opener in the interview was Daniel Beneš's revelation that the flawed safety checks had been going on for around a decade, and that it had the appearance of a very sophisticated fraud. This is what he had to say.
I do not think it was slackness. It was a very sophisticated and deliberate fraud. If nearly all of the workers at this firm took part in a deliberate fraud, it's not slackness, but a criminal act, and that is how it must be treated.
Daniel Beneš added that ČEZ had no reason on the face of it to doubt the competence of the company contracted to carry out the safety checks, because it had been authorised by the state to carry out such specialised work. He added that heads could be expected to roll at ČEZ for the embarrassing turn of events. Both Ches and the state nuclear watchdog, the State Office for Nuclear Safety, have already filed criminal proceedings over the failings. Ches will also seek to recoup its lost earnings. The safety checks in question were focused on pipes outside the core reactors, but they nonetheless relate to some of the safety and backup systems that would be called upon in an emergency when other equipment failed or in the case of human error. The flawed safety checks are all the more embarrassing since Dukovany previously had one of the most reliable and consistent safety records of all nuclear reactors worldwide. The dent in its reputation could not come at a worse time, with a probable 10-year operating extension on the oldest reactor now stalled by the Czech nuclear watchdog until Ches gets its paperwork and safety procedures back in order.
We begin with tennis and the news that the Czech Republic have reached the semi-finals of the Fed Cup. The defending champions made it into the last four of the international team competition for the eighth time in succession with a 3-2 victory over Romania in Cluj. The Czechs fell behind in the first singles rubber on Sunday when Petra Kvitová, who had also lost the previous day, was beaten by world number 3 Simona Halep. But just like in November's final against Russia in Prague, it was Karolina Plíšková who saved the day. She first overcame Monica Niculescu in an encounter lasting more than 2.25 hours to make it 2-2 in matches. The 23-year-old then teamed up with Barbara Strýcová for the doubles decider. Seeing off the Romanian pair of Andreea Mitu and Raluca Olaru 6-2, 6-3 to send the Czechs through. Despite their heroics, however, Plíšková insisted that the plaudits should be shared.
I definitely don't want to be regarded as a heroine. There are a lot of people behind our team, so it's not just my work. Even Petra, who lost, was trying to win a point, so that's the way it goes sometimes. And Barbara and I won the doubles, so it definitely wasn't down to me alone. You never know how things will go. Next time I could lose both singles matches.
The Czech Republic's non-playing captain, Petr Pála, had words of consolation for Kvitová and praise for the whole team.
It was close, and I'm happy for the girls that they pulled it off like they did. Possible playoffs would have been very tough, but now we can look forward to the semifinals against Switzerland. We knew this tie would be even, but we didn't know how it would go. Admittedly, things didn't go well for Petra today, but in my view, she played excellently. She showed that she's able to play tennis.
Kvitová, Plíšková and Co will face a Swiss team likely to include Slovak-born Martina Hingis in mid-April. Switzerland have never won the Fed Cup, while the Czech Republic have lifted the trophy 4 times in the last 5 seasons. Soccer and the Czech top flight resumes next weekend after its 2-month winter break. In a warm-up, second-placed Sparta Prague welcomed Slovak side Žilina to their Letná stadium at the weekend. The hosts won 4-2 in a game that saw striker Josef Šural score 2 goals and set up another. Šural, who has 7 international caps, recently joined Sparta from Liberec in the most high-profile domestic signing of the transfer window. And finally, the Czech mixed biathlon relay team finished way down in 10th at a World Cup event in Canada's Canmore on Sunday. The reigning world champions were undone by the poor shooting performance of Veronika Vítková. She missed the target 6 times out of 8 and picked up 3 penalty loops. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that's the end of the sports news for today.
Okay, thanks to Ian with the sport there, and he's staying on for today's main feature. The Czech Republic's large Roma minority are beset by social problems from high unemployment to poor rates of educational attainment. To find out what their lives are really like, documentary maker Tomáš Kratochvíl took his camera and little else and went to live in a Romani community. He's Ian Willoughby's guest in this week's edition of One on One.
One of the most thought-provoking documentaries to hit local cinema screens in recent months has been Czechs Against Czechs by Tomáš Kratochvíl. In the highly personal film, the young director, a member of the majority population, goes to live in a desperately poor Romani ghetto in North Bohemia. Along the way, he also encounters far-right activists who organise anti-Roma demonstrations, as well as members of the public who don't hide their hatred of the ethnic minority. When we spoke, I asked Kratochvíl what had first led him to find a new home in a Romani community.
Well, my aim was to help myself, to solve my situation with wife, which left me, and I really needed some change. So I was thinking about going around the world by hitchhiking or something like that. And then I thought, okay, you are a filmmaker, you should connect this situation and make film. And I knew that the situation of Roma people in Czech Republic is really bad, so I decided to move to them and to do both.
Did you ever feel that there was a danger that it could be a kind of tourism in the ghetto? Because you can come in your car and leave at any time if you don't like it or if it's unpleasant. Did you ever feel there was a danger that it might appear to be a kind of tourism?
Yeah, it is danger, of course. But my situation was that I didn't have car in the beginning. I didn't have money. I had nothing. I had just small camera and my backpack. And I didn't come to say them that I'm the savior, or I'm going to say them how to behave or what to do, which white people normally do if they are visiting ghetto. I was like, hey, help me, I need help. And gypsy people are very good in helping people.
It's a very personal film. You talk about the fact that your father in the 1990s supported Sladek, the far-right politician who very often targeted Romanis. When you were growing up, was there much anti-Romani feeling around you, or anti-Romani prejudice?
Of course it is. And the funny thing is that in my area there are no Roma people. We didn't meet them with my brothers, but we knew from our father that they are dangerous and they are bad, which is crazy.
Did you ever have a period in your life, even when you were young, when you were small, when you actually believed what your dad was saying about the Romanis?
Yeah, I think so, because I had one friend, he was older than me, and he was beating me one time, and I didn't know how to fight back. So I said to him, you are half gypsy, because I knew that his mother was maybe gypsy, or some people said like that. I don't know if it was true, maybe not, but I used it as the worst swear word which I could imagine. And he was like, oh, he just stopped fighting with me. It was really bad what I said.
Before you went to stay in the ghetto in Usti, you must have had some expectations about what you would find there. How close was the reality to what you had expected?
Normally people expect that those who live in ghetto are thieves and violent people, and their behaving is not compatible with modern civilization. Well, it's not true. In ghetto there are normal people, and if any of us would grow up in ghetto, we all will behave like that. I mean, their way of survive is different from ours, because they have different position. They can't get normal work. They have to work in a black market with a little few money. They don't have models about somebody who was studying and working hard and made a good money and have a good life. Nothing like this exists. Everybody is poor. Everybody is addicted to something. Everybody has problems with money, and that's their reality. But they are normal people, good people, in different position.
Speaking of money, your main character, this guy Yarda, he seems quite atypical as a Romani. He's a landlord, he's a tough businessman. He seems to be more interested in making money from his community than in any kind of community spirit, at least in the beginning of the film.
Yes, Yarda is not a millionaire. He must earn money to pay to some executors which are trying to kill his business. Yes, it's true that in the beginning he didn't take care about these marches and neo-Nazi stuff, but when it started to be a reality, also in Ústí, in his place, he was involved.
You mentioned neo-Nazis. Over the years, we've seen many demonstrations, some of them violent, against the Romani population in several Czech cities and towns. And it's the people that organise those demonstrations who are also one of the main subjects of your film. Hmm. Could you describe some of the people that you met in the making of the film?
Well, one of these guys, his name is Jindřich Svoboda. He was organising these marches and he was in the position, well, listen, people, I was saying this for years. Romani are really bad. It is a problem. Let's do something. Let's make the laws in our city to move them out. We don't want them here. And people were listening and people voted him. So he is now a member of the city council. And the laws in this and the rules in this town are really so bad that if you are black or if you are living in the ghetto area, you can't sit on the bench, you can't speak in the park, you can't do barbecue. So, yeah, they succeed. Most of Romani people emigrated.
And are these people who demonstrate against the Romanis, are they mainly ideologically driven, or are they just kind of frustrated people who are uneducated?
Both. These people are frustrated because it's 25 years since revolution. Everybody or media or elites from Prague tell them, okay, we are in Europe, we are fine, we have democracy, we are rich. But they are not rich. Their salary is shit. They see that we don't earn not half, not one third of the salary which has which people in Germany or Austria earn. They don't know what will be tomorrow. They can easily end in the ghetto with gypsies. And that's why they are upset and scary and frustrated. On the other hand, xenophobia is part of Czech mentality. We saw it in the 19th century against Jews. Now we don't have Jews, so it's against the Roma people. We are pretending that it doesn't exist, that we are fine, nice people, but we should look at it and confess that it's reality. For example, Second World War, there were concentration camps for gypsy people and we were organizing this. We, Czech people, not Germans. And on the place where these one of these concentration camps was standing, there is a pig farm, huge pig farm.
Leti, South Bohemia.
Yes. And we are not able to buy this farm from the owner as a state and destroy it and build some statue or something instead of it. Czech people, they don't know about this history. We don't teach it in the school. So that is the problem. We are pretending there is no xenophobia. And now we are pretty surprised. What is it? What are these neo-Nazi stuff? And what is Konvička? And what is Zeman doing? What happened? But it is in us. Always was.
Well, this leads me to my next question. People say that Czech society is becoming more divided. Over the last year, we've seen a lot of anti-refugee and anti-migrant sentiment. Do you have any sense that these people on the far right, who you documented in your film, that they are now, in a sense, transferring their hatred towards the refugees and migrants?
Yes, of course, because it's the topic number one. But it doesn't mean that they love Romani people. Of course, they hate them as before. They hate everything different. Yeah, it's quite funny that this is happening in Czech Republic because there are no Muslims here, no migrants here. They don't want to come here, and it seems to me very stupid that so many Czech people are so hysterical.
Maybe this is a funny question, but have things in a way improved for the Romanis if there are fewer demonstrations against them in their cities, in their towns, because these far-right people are focusing their energies elsewhere?
Yes, that's true. Right now, it's good for them, because there are no marches against no marches to ghetto, no marches to the social housing buildings. But as I said, it doesn't mean that they are okay forever.
Do you have any optimism for the future for Romanis?
Well, I think generally we are standing in the beginning of something new, and we don't know, nobody knows how it will look like. We have about 2 months for solving the migrants' question. Everybody says so, and we don't know what will happen. But I was thinking like this. I don't know if I can explain it in English, but in 19th century, there was a working class trying to get more power. And now it's like a non-white Western class, in global meaning, trying to get their rights and their economic benefits. So it hurts, but it's necessary.
And that was Tomáš Kratochvíl, a young documentary maker who was Ian Willoughby's guest in that edition of One on One. It brings us just about to the end of today's program. But as always, don't forget that you can comment on anything you heard today, or you can contact us here at the station if you have any questions for us. The address is english@radio.cz to write to. And if you want to look up more stories or news items, features, whatever, in sound and text, radio.cz is the address to visit. I'm Jan Vellinger, for myself and for all of us here at Radio Prague. Thanks so much for joining us this day, and take care.